Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Chips of Chorlton. We are in Robin's kitchen. I am joined again by Robin.
Hello.
Andy.
Hi.
And Duncan.
All right.
Hello, and we have been fueled this week by the chips from Atlantic Chippy. We are giving the people what they want. Yes. The review of Atlantic Chippy.
Coming up,
yeah. But thanks, we had a load of good responses to the podcast. We're past 1,000 listens. And loads of requests for chip reviews, things to do. And sorry that, yeah, Pete can't be with us. He's away doing his thing with Ellie Goulding at the minute, so he can't join us. But yeah, so this week we're going to talk about Viagogo. We're going to review the Arctic Monkeys record, because it's about time we
briefly. Well, let's not... I mean, we're already 3 weeks late to the circus on this.
So I know, I know.
Let's not go nuts about it.
Yep, and we're going to obviously review Atlantic Chippy, mixed, not to give too much away, but I think it's going to be mixed. And we're also going to touch on the year anniversary of the Manchester bombings. So Viagogo have been branded the worst business in Britain this week.
By a Conservative Culture Secretary.
Which is some fucking going, really, isn't it? So there's two problems with that. There's some new commercial regulations that they're not adhering to. I think it's they're not putting a correct representation of the cost up front to the customer. That's one issue. The second issue is Ed Sheeran's managed to somehow delete 1,000 tickets or claim back 1,000 tickets that were sold on Viagogo, hasn't he?
Can you do it with a loop pedal these days?
A loop pedal, yeah.
Such a bitch.
Sorry. Yeah, he's a great busker.
So,
yeah, but I mean, I don't know, voiding 1,000 tickets is surely just punishing the fans. The idea behind ticket touting and Viagogo in general is that there's demand, therefore there's supply of tickets, just supply and demand, obviously. So the only thing fans can do to stop it happening is to not use them. However, if you really, really want to go to a gig and you're that passionate about music and God knows, like, the music industry needs those people, then you're going to pay for it. So I don't know where it ends, really, whether people will just genuinely miss out on gigs to stop the touts, but I can't see it happening, really.
Yeah, there were some stories of people buying £1,000 tickets to see Ed. And a part of the ticket you would get like a meet and greet, which actually wasn't there, and
nice. Yeah,
loving it. Carry on, keep going.
When I saw someone share today, like a link to a Rolling Stones ticket for £1,035 for one ticket, and then it showed on the website whereabouts this ticket was, and it was in those seats, you know, like at arena gigs, which are just sort of slightly behind the stage.
Backstage tickets.
almost, but like you get a view of Ronnie Wood's head,
yeah,
and that's probably about it.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
But
acoustically, it's a write-off.
Yeah, and you know, visually, you're not going to see much, really.
Well, except some sweet old tushies, I suppose.
Just about,
and maybe the actual guitarist that's playing behind Keith Richards.
Oh, that would be a good view, wouldn't it?
Yeah. All I'm saying is, I was there at Glastonbury the year they played Busman's Holiday. Won't get into it, long story. However, the guitar playing and that was like, those are not the knuckles of a 60-year-old or 70-year-old chronic everything-aholic. like, there's absolutely no way. He can't even form a power chord of those.
I think it's
anymore.
Pretty well known that he doesn't play.
Yeah, all respect to him. All respect
to him. He still goes on stage and that gives the people what they want.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely love his jazz.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. It's all good. And they played Miss You at Glastonbury, and I was like, oh, I forgot they wrote that song. And then that's...
Blink-182.
Blink-182 cover.
Yeah, that Blink-182 cover. That fabled Blink-182 cover. And yeah, I enjoyed the gig, but I was like, there's absolutely no shitting way in Christ that he's playing that guitar. Well, and that's my professional opinion. I was stood by that tree that you can see on TV at the very back of the Pyramid Stadium.
But you could still tell.
But I could tell that.
Yeah.
Well, Mick Jagger sells his wristbands, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, we're talking about secondhand ticket sites, and what was the game?
It was Bestival, wasn't it?
Was it a Bestival?
We were playing the Thursday night in the Jägermeister stage.
Yes.
Oh, those heady days.
Without Henry, so I had to do.
So we could only play one song off the new album.
We shouldn't expect listeners to know what a gig without Henry is actually like, but in short, it's
fucking traumatic.
So we played on the Thursday, and there was only one other act on that night. Who was it?
Jamie XX,
and they managed to put us on at exactly the same
time. Exactly the same time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So our crowd was, you know, pretty poor, to be fair.
Yeah. It was a shit show.
Yeah. But then we left because we were getting the ferry back to the mainland on the same day, and then you know, a lovable Cockney tout. Cockney geezer.
Well, the thing is, we'd seen him on the way in as well. He wanted to buy our wristbands before we'd even entered.
But he knew
that. Well, either way, it's not that big. Yeah. So
he clocked that we were leaving for good, I think.
Yeah. If I remember, they offered us quite a sizable amount of money for our... Because we had AAA, like, didn't we?
300 quid?
Yeah, I'm going to say at least 200. Yeah. It was definitely more... It was hundreds, and it was more than 100. I remember that much.
It was more than I got paid for the gig, basically. That's kind of...
Well, we got paid for the
gig. This guy.
His pitch for us selling our wristbands to him was that he said, he claimed to know, that even Mick Jagger had sold his wristbands at one point in his career.
Even Mick Jagger's has his wristbands.
Just to put some context on this situation, we were the only van queuing up to get on a midnight ferry on a Thursday night in the Isle of Wight, and there was this one pub next to the ferry, and because this guy had come up and accosted us, assuring us that Mick Jagger does indeed sell
even
his wristbands,
Mick Jagger.
We had to then drive around to the other side of town and hide. We had to hide in our van in a co-op car park. I think it was a co-op car park. Because we were like, we can't go near there again. I'll try and buy the wristbands.
We're not Mick Jagger.
For the reason... just for the record, the reason why we didn't sell the wristbands is that they are numbered. So if anyone was to get caught with a wristband, they can check the number and they'll know exactly whose it is, which is why you wouldn't do it.
Yes. There's a big responsibility for us, really.
And we may want to play that Jägermeister Hut again.
One day.
One day.
But the moral of the story is, even Mick Jagger sells his wristbands.
Apparently.
According to Lovable Cockney Ticket Tout.
So is what Ed Sheeran did a good thing? Do we like Ed Sheeran a little bit more?
What do you think?
I know. Do you like Ed Sheeran for buying all those tickets off those talent
websites? Because
he's
a faceless champion of averageness. I think the man has absolutely no reason to stand on any issue when you can headline Glastonbury in 1 week and then go and play a personal performance in the offices of the Sun newspaper the next. Andy, do you remember when I bought me and you tickets to see the Maccabees at Night and Day?
I
bought them secondhand.
Yeah.
They were like 40 quid each back in 2004.
What was the face value on that, Night and Day?
Oh yeah, it was like 12 quid a ticket.
At what price could it have stopped you from buying those tickets though? If it was like a tenner extra?
You're trying to gauge my enthusiasm for the Maccabees 14 years ago now.
Well, exactly. Because that's probably when you were at your most musically enthusiastic.
We paid 60 quid to go and see the Strokes. I remember that being the most money I'd paid for
where'd you see
I remember everyone else managed to get tickets, and me and you, point at Duncan here, we didn't get tickets at the time, so we had to go on eBay.
Did we?
And we paid
second night of the Apollo?
Was that the Apollo?
It's worth it, because that's when they played 12:51.
Yes,
they didn't play the night before.
I think
how would you toy with a song that big?
I know,
Shout Out Loud supported them then as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think your response there says everything about the fans' opinion to it. Like, they're so excited about these gigs. They're huge gigs, and if they're sold out, it almost makes the gig more desirable because they're sold out.
I suppose if you ask people now, so the gigs that you've touted for, you're talking Strokes at the Apollo and the Maccabees at the Night and Day.
Yeah.
Come on, they're good shows, you know what I mean? People are going to be paying nowadays. That Maccabee show at the Night and Day, that's cheap. Touting that for 40 quid.
Well, 2004 prices.
Well, even so, you speak
2004
to,
prices.
I think if you speak to someone now, they're paying hundreds for that to get into that show.
Well, I would say...
Well, the ticket is 25 quid.
Well, you're either a massive fan or a massive idiot if you're going to, like, pay over the odds on some, you know.
Yeah.
It's one or the other. And, you know, you do it. It's part of the story. Like, I enjoyed that, you know, I enjoyed that Maccabees gig. We enjoyed that Strokes gig.
Stop. We're going to change up for the next podcast. We're going to have a very special guest.
Just special guest.
Yeah.
Just guest.
We're going to have a guest.
So we have Jeremy from Everything Everything joining us on episode 4.
We're excited to see what chip establishment he wants to review.
Yes.
It will be his choice.
It will be his choice.
Certainly. Yeah, dealer's choice.
Yes, so we've got things that we want to talk to him about, but if you have, let us know. Yeah, so we're going to answer the Atlantic question. We have just been to Atlantic Chippy.
The Atlantic question.
Sounds like genocide.
The Atlantic question, yeah, a bit of a prog album title, really, isn't it? Yeah.
The Atlantic question.
Yeah, definitely.
The Atlantic question.
There was a lot of hype going into this thing.
There was. It's, as soon as you say you're doing a podcast about chips and Chorlton, people say, Atlantic's the best, Atlantic's the best. So we've tried it 10 minutes before... we started recording this podcast. We were digesting their chips.
Yeah, so they're still swirling in the belly as we speak.
Mm. Yeah,
still taste them.
So let's set the scene a little bit. We decided to take a seat. We ordered two large portions of chips with a pot of gravy and a pot of curry.
I was the cash handler.
You sorted it all out.
On the occasion, I sorted it out. Duncan sorted it out. I gotta say, straight up. Big faux pas from the establishment itself. They allowed me to salt and vinegar our own chips. It's like, I'm not used to the dynamics of your chippy-shaped salt shaker. You know what I mean? Like, that's the first time that's ever happened. Yeah. First time I've ever been given the I'm trying to think, like the grail, as it were. You know, like, it's the
were
first
you given
time
the option to do it, like, for them to do it, or were they just...
Well, like... there were people watching at that point. But like, because I said to them, like, are you going to salt and vinegar these? And they went, no, you're eating in, you do it. And I was like, oh, okay. And it came to that point where it's like that moment where you go home for a Sunday roast and then your mum goes, right, you carve the chicken. And you go, really?
The fear.
This is organic. Like, it's very small. It's a nimble thing. You know, and your knife is old and all these things. Needless to say, it was an absolute... Yeah. Yeah, the pressure was on. And I wasn't able to just go, actually, no, I want you to do this because you know how these dynamics work. So I already felt shortchanged in that sense.
I suppose to add to that, they didn't put it on plates either. You know, I think when we go to the Royal Cod down the road, I think you get it served on a plate when you eat in. Apparently.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, they play it up. So essentially what they did was they gave us a takeaway experience and they knew we were sitting down because obviously we must have told them.
But obviously, it's... But they're fresh.
Yeah, I think maybe before we go into the chip aesthetic generally, what was the environment like that we ate in? My first thought about it was, it's a windowless back room. It feels like you're sort of... eating it in some...
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, it was a really sunny day, so the light was shining through, but any other day, it would probably feel like a bit of a dark place to be.
I had heard mumblings of a Black Lodge-esque kind of thing going on, a bit Twin Peaks, bit in the way that when you sit down at the... Because I had originally been told... Because, you know, those seats weren't there, were they, for ages? It used to just be a mirror there, I think.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, it's new, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the chips, then. Andy, I'll start with you.
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, the other week we went down Beach Road in Chorlton, and this is going to be another episode probably, but Beach Road Chippy I thought was great. There was enough browning, enough crispiness. I thought that's what it was lacking today.
They were old school.
Yeah. It wasn't as crispy as I wanted it to be. And I think, obviously, it's difficult to cook chips in general. The shapes and the sizes, they're all different. But I think you, Neil, said that one of them, or a couple of them, were uncooked.
Yeah.
Like in the middle or raw.
Yeah, so we shared our batch, didn't we? And I was, as I am with Atlantic, generally underwhelmed by the whole experience of it.
That sounds a bit predetermined.
No, honestly. I mean,
I agree. It was the same experience that I've had. And I said at the time as well, I think maybe, and maybe not intentionally, but it is perhaps the hipsters of Chorlton thinking that it's a traditional experience, maybe. And I know that might be a controversial opinion.
And just to sort of address the challenge that, you know, maybe I was a bit predetermined. I've been there three times over the last 10 days, and the first time I went, I thought it was excellent. And the
pre-research.
I knew Atlantic was on.
Why didn't you tell us it was your third time?
Well, you know. I see.
So, you're duping us.
I know, exactly. So... But the my opinion of Atlantic is that it's hit and miss.
Yeah, I agree. Have we got a contrasting opinion on that?
I enjoyed the chips tonight. I thought there was a nice variety. You know, the the different shapes and sizes. I didn't get any of the undercooked chips that you had. Obviously, it was a different scoop. Yeah. Like I said to you, I went to Mary and Archie's the other day and had the chips there, and they were bang
on. We're only doing one review here, Rob.
I know, but just in terms of a comparison, okay. Obviously we will do an official review of Mary and Archie's chips, but they're very different, and I enjoyed them for very different reasons as well. Like, they're a very different chip. I was going to say crunchy. They weren't crunchy. That's not the term.
Yeah. Well, the little bits were.
The little bits were crunchy.
The little crunchy bits.
But you couldn't get them on your fork. That was a bit annoying.
Yeah, that was that one bit that went in like your cheek or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. I still ate it.
That would be my one downfall. Little crunchy bits. You couldn't put them on your fork. And then when you did get them on the fork, they'd fall into your curry sauce and you'd lose them.
Plastic forks.
Nightmare.
They gave us plastic forks to eat in.
That's the authentic experience, though.
I mean, I will never get over being told to salt and vinegar my own chips. Right?
I think that's just that's for a the start, more contentious issue.
That is horrible. That's a horrible position to be put in. It's not something I ever want to be put in ever again. And if it happens again, I might have a condition about it. And I might just go a little bit, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what. I'm not going to be responsible for my actions.
You'll be the first person to lose your shit in Atlantic.
I will be the first. Oh, definitely. It's like, I've been, you know, I've been making a living out of losing my shit out of those things for 10 years. But
the chips themselves.
What I will say, the chips themselves, I'm down with it. I like it. In fact, I said at the very beginning, 7.5 out of 10 straight away. However, what I will say is the first chip I did have, I did dip in the gravy. I had it with the gravy and I said, that's OXO. That is non-league gravy.
Yeah, to be fair, the gravy was poor.
And
curry sauce was quite good, but the gravy was poor.
But this is chip shop gravy, though. Where does it get better?
No, that was bullshit gravy. That was charlatan gravy.
So where the Chinese chippy, I think the creamery is there now. Is that where the Chinese chippy used to be?
Oh, that Taylor, gravy the creamy there. Does chips.
But the gravy there was absolutely phenomenal. But the gravy was non-league gravy.
Yes. Question is, are we going to go there again?
I mean, not to review it,
but just as regular ship munchers.
This is the thing. I probably will end up going there again.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think because it is open late, and you know, it's open in non-traditional chippy hours, so probably.
I suppose the way I see it, so I go for a chippy. I don't know, once a month, whatever, you know, as like a treat. Am I going to go to Atlantic for that treat? No. I think that's where my head's at with it.
Okay. Well, shall we do a pitchfork style score?
Okay.
Duncan, yours is 7.5.
Oh, no. Mine's... No? Yeah, it is.
Okay, 7.5.
Oh, you're doing the
I've got my iPhone out. I'm doing it.
I'm going to give it 6.7.
6.7. Rob?
7.2.
And myself, I'm going to go 6.5. And that is that, and that is divided by 4, and that is an average score of 7.
Wow,
is that safe?
Decent.
Top of the leaderboard of chips.
That is money in the bank. I would say it probably is top of the lead. No. Wait, what about spoons? Or did we just say that spoons?
We haven't reviewed it officially yet.
Oh wow.
To be honest, guys, I gotta say, I know we're only 3 episodes in, but I do question our chip reviews at this point. is this the first time we've actually reviewed a chip review with like an actual score?
Yeah, it's constantly.
All right. Well, at least it only took 3 episodes to get there. Right. So Atlantic, 7 out of 10.
Exactly.
There we go. So we thought we'd do some reviews of music. Considering we're supposed to be some sort of music and chips, considering we absolutely destroyed reviewing chips a moment ago.
Well, I mean,
let's review a record.
Well, let's be realistic here, Neil. We're already 3 weeks too late to the party on this.
Pretty
one.
Much.
But secondly to that, this is more than a review. This is more of a talking point within music. Anyway, I don't think it's not like we're just picking any random. Like, it's not like we're reviewing the second Lady Fuzz album or anything like that.
Oh, imagine that.
Get a second album.
Stop laughing. They will come back.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. No, we really wouldn't. But we'd give them a shot, is the point.
Yeah. So where my head's at with the Arctic Monkeys' new record, I think we might have discussed this before, maybe off mic, is that it is deemed sort of they're the band that have saved rock and roll, and now they're trying to save the album. You know what I mean? So maybe like we've discussed before, like if you are a new band on Spotify, you have to put all your good tracks at the top, and who gives a shit about all, you know, you don't get that kind of end-to-end experience for an album. Arctic Monkeys, as the reviews are mixed, and some of the reviews have said, you need to listen to this. It's a record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what do you all think of it? Do you think it's a good album? There are no singles on there as such, are there?
It's an interesting point that you say that they saved rock and roll when we've just talked about Rolling Stones selling tickets for £1,000. But yes.
That's the end of rock and roll. Not the
Is that the end? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So the end's happening whilst the beginning is as
pretty
well.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So is that how it works?
A new dawn.
Okay, just checking.
The circular.
Just checking. Just checking in the room. In short, you know what? I'm so happy to have got in at the top floor with Arctic Monkeys. I'm so happy that I avoided each and every other album before this one, because I can appreciate the potency of the lyricism, not only as a songwriter but just as a general listener. Really appreciate it. And what I would say is that what the people who like it are saying, that it sounds like Sergeant Peppers or it sounds like David Bowie, I think they're all wrong. I think those are all misguided ideas.
I think it does sound... I don't think it sounds like the Beatles. I think it sounds like Lennon, and I think it sounds like Bowie. I don't think it does sound...
It definitely has smacks of these things, but it is not the things that people are trying to make it out to be. And thirdly, I think people miss... For all the criticism that Alex Turner got for moving to LA and not being the guy from a Shane Meadows film anymore, even though he did go abroad... This is his most connected album with the woes of the British people, and his most insightful album as to the indulgences of the life he now leads. I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think it's everything. And if you listen to it carefully enough, you'll see that he's riddled with guilt at the fact that he cannot influence anything that's happening around him and the people that he loves.
Yeah, nice. I'd go... That was sincere.
Yeah, nice.
Basically, yeah, nice one.
Yeah. Oh, just dropped the log.
Yeah, shut the fuck up, dog.
I didn't smoke.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was genuinely sincere.
Keep that.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Whatever. My turn. Do you think I'm a bad music listener if I don't appreciate lyricism as much as musicianship in albums and songs? Do you think I can appreciate that album as much as you can as someone who listens to lyrics? I'm asking is it a good album? Do you think it's a good album for me if you take away sort of an in-depth or analysis of lyrics?
I mean, I would say yes, because I like its texture anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think there's a vibe from that record that I've probably not heard for a while from a four-piece guitar band.
Musically, it's very retro. It's very 70s.
Yeah, it's
and which is why people compare it to Bowie and the Beatles, and it's like...
Well, what I would say is that the Bowie and the Beatles comparisons, first of all, Sergeant Pepper's absolutely no way, no how.
No.
That you're having a beer there, Rob. It's a very... Sergeant Pepper's very happy album. In all, except for the last song, of course. Like, you know, when all's said and done, very cheery, very catchy. What this is more like is Abbey Road, perhaps, or maybe the White Album, which, as an interesting fact, is not called the White Album, it's called The Beatles.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Big time. And in terms of Bowie references, if it was relevant to any Bowie era, or Bowie, however you want to say it, I would say, I mean, well... Perhaps Scary Monsters, when you think about Ashes to Ashes and his own sort of self-evaluation within that song itself. But I would say in terms of the performance It's more like The Next Day or Black Star. I would say it's more like the end of Bowie if it was going to be any other era, because that's obviously how close to the bone I think Alex is trying to express himself.
Yeah, evoking more of those 70s rock ballads than...
But a lot of people, when they think of Bowie, they'll be thinking, oh yeah, he's trying to be like Low, or he's trying to be like Station to Station and all those other ones. Like, nah, mate, those... I mean, obviously they were very cocaine-fueled. Let's make no bones about that. But at the same time, those albums are really just something, you know, people that say that haven't listened to those albums. I've listened to the albums of that era that I own, I've listened to, and it's like, they're just very confusing pieces, but they do have some great moments in them. Yeah. So, and this is coherent all the way through. Track for track, it's great. My only criticism of it is that the world's first monster truck front flip is not as good as the title suggests, and that is the only criticism I can find with it.
There were so many fans who said, why didn't you make AM2? It's like, but well, because it's a new album.
It's just the general sometimes response you get from making an album that's taken a while from the previous popular album.
Years, isn't it? They've taken to write this album, but at the same time, it's still a new album. Matt Riley played one of the Arts and Monkeys' latest tunes, even though he's never been into the Arts and Monkeys before, mainly because of the backlash against the press they'd had.
Really?
Yeah. You know, like he said, there's been so many people saying, why haven't you replicated your previous album? I feel like
reviewers and journalists have probably said that to every big successful rock band in particular, where there is sort of an artistic integrity in it. Like, why haven't you done that? Why didn't you do the thing that was popular beforehand? But they would never do that for a pop act. Pop acts just do what's popular. And
the Arts and Monkeys are so big now. They're so big now that they could, if they wanted to, they could make AM2 and they could make AM3. They could just carry on making the same album over and over again.
But they could wait 10 years to make another AM2. And you know what? When they finally did, everyone's waiting. Everyone's waiting on the next single that they release. No matter how many singles they released off Tranquility Base, Hotel and Casino, whenever they came out with a single for the next thing, everyone's going to be all ears. They are, because everyone's going to be waiting for them to, like, all right, okay, where did you... You know, I think everyone's enticed. They have enticed even the haters with this album. Like, they're untouchable, really, in a way.
They are, and they deserve to be, really.
Yeah, they do, and they do. Yeah. It's well-deserved.
So you turned down the opportunity to play with Arctic Monkeys, didn't you? Because that's obviously a great career move.
Sure did.
Yes, we did. The offers were on the table. The Arctic Monkeys at Jabez Clegg, or Deadfly Bukowski at Dry Bar. And we're like, looking at these offers, like, well, you know, I'd seen Deadfly Bukowski on MTV2, so it's a no-brainer. Let's go for that one. So we supported Deadfly Bukowski at Dry Bar.
Or so we thought.
So it was one of those gigs where, one of V-Man's special gigs where you're brought in as the support act, but because you're the local band, you end up headlining the slot.
Well, you say headlining, but it's more of a jog down.
Yeah.
Yeah, a warm down act.
Yeah, it's the warm down band. While people are leaving, you're playing. And your job is to try and make them not leave. But then again, I don't know, like Deadfly Bukowski, their thing was that they were signed to Beggar's Banquet, which was a label that we knew. Aged 17.
And we had seen their video on MTV too,
Robin, did we see it at 3 in the morning?
Quite possibly.
However, yeah. Arctic Monkeys was some stupid jazz name that where the hell's that coming from? And who would ever call themselves something so stupid?
Who would listen to the music with a name like that?
Whereas Deadfly Bukowski.
Deadfly Bukowski?
Oh, now you're talking.
Wait, there's a name you can set your watch to. And we certainly did when we played to our family.
Obviously, terrorist attacks are fucking atrocious wherever they are. But I think this was, you know, Manchester is a proud community. But what made this different was it was an attack on kids. I think ultimately that's what is the difference between this and any other one. And kids and the LGBT plus community. And generally, this was someone who took advantage of the fact that Ariana Grande was someone who appealed to that audience and then took advantage of that massively, which is what made it different, I think, to other terrorist attacks, perhaps. And I don't know, like, we knew someone who lost their lives in it as well. And I think that's one thing with him as well, like with Martin, who we knew through school. And there's sometimes, like, there can be, you know, an accentuation of what people were like. But I think, honestly, the tributes to him were exactly how he was. You know, there were everything that was said about him was correct. You know, like, you've got a story about him when you were at sixth form college. And
yeah, well, we were saying before, like, when we started college, you know, we were 16, we just left school, started college in Marple, and Martin was the first openly gay person our age that we'd met. And he was so warm and welcoming, and he was so friendly towards everyone. And it opened us to a new community, and I involved him with you know, because he was a great friend for a few years that we were at college.
He inspired everyone else that was of, you know, he inspired everyone else that was gay at college to kind of, yes, well, maybe not
definitely.
Everyone else, you know, but he inspired
other people, definitely.
Other people,
yeah,
to really just be okay with it in a public platform.
We had a gig, an outdoor sort of festival-y gig, the following Saturday after the bombing. I don't know, was the bombing on a Saturday or Sunday? I don't know. Or
it was on
Friday.
A, you know, no. Yeah. You know what? It was on a Monday.
I remember the. I remember coming. I got the train after work to meet you in London for this show at King's Cross. It was a terrible show that we did.
Henry wasn't there.
Obviously. It's a bad show. And I don't think we felt worried to play the show. You know, we didn't really feel like there was any risk to our security playing a show outdoors so close to it. It's just that
it was still a very intimate show. Yeah. It was never going to be anything outside of anyone's control.
Yeah, exactly. And I just felt like
there was a lot of emotion.
It was a beautiful night. You think about it. Yeah. I mean, other than how we played, it was a beautiful night. I mean, the idea was there was going to be a minute's silence. Was it at half ten? It was at half ten when the attack happened. There was going to be a minute's silence, but we had been told to infuse this silence within our own set. So we were like, okay, so the idea is that we play and then the silence happens and then we carry on playing, because that's the only way that you can emphasize this. And luckily, two things happened. First of all, I had my foot on the sustain pedal on the piano. Secondly, I'd completely forgotten when to come back in on a song. Because I remember, like, we have never had such a timed gig before. We had a countdown clock from the beginning of our set, telling us when half ten was going to come around. And it's so, like, you know, like, you just think, on top of everything else, like, I mean, it was, in a way, it's helpful that it made us not think about the technicalities, about the fact that, you know what, the PA is a bit shit, and you know what, my monitor isn't right, and you know what else, like, you know, people in the crowd can tell that they're not enjoying our gig like they would normally, because we were really under the, you know, we weren't having a good gig in general.
It wasn't a great, and
we were missing Henry. Henry, please come back. so all that was going on. However, we get to this point and we're literally looking at 30 seconds on the clock and we're playing our song Dressage. And anyone who's aware of Dressage will know it's a very fast song, very high octane, as they say. And all of a sudden we get to this point where it's literally the last 5 seconds and I was fiddling around on the piano and I managed to just kind of do like a big like flourish and I thought I was supposed to do something else. I just completely panicked. I did something else and it worked out perfectly that we had on such a clear night in the middle of Islington, was it? No, King's Cross.
King's Cross.
In the middle of King's Cross. Middle of King's Cross, a silent crowd of, would you say 400, 500 people, something like that. And there we are, just this big piano flourish. Everyone, we announced it, didn't we? We said, you know, in this song, we're going to make a minute silence happen because it's happening across the world. And it happened, and it was perfect. And at that point, you just thought, why did it ever kind of come to this? Yeah, I don't know. It was so weird.
Yeah.
That minute silence was just like...
It was so poignant, wasn't it?
It was poignant, and we executed it perfectly. But at the same time, it was like, well, why is this even occurring?
Why did this have to happen?
Can we just talk about Martin?
Yeah.
Please, let's talk about Martin. We got some funny stories about Martin. Let's talk about Martin. He was great. He was fucking great. It's a real shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah, so I was in drama with Martin. College, and we did Jane Eyre AS level, and I remember the auditions for it, and they're in three.
There were auditions for this.
Yeah. Well,
I thought you had to do this for class. I thought this was college class.
Yeah, but there's only three guys in the class.
Oh, right.
So it's obviously, you know, there's three guys auditioning for the role of Mr. Rochester.
I remember you reading your lines at my house at five in the morning when I had a free house. And you were like, Duncan, I need a reading partner. Please read these lines with me. It's like, Rob, college starts in 3 hours. You're not remembering these.
Oh my God, that's horrific. Yeah, so yeah, I got the role of Mr. Rochester, which, you know, I was buzzing about. Martin got the role of Mr. Rochester's dog. And we ended up doing the show, and you know, I thought it went reasonably well. But the thing was, Martin absolutely stole the show, and we got our marks later on. Obviously, later on in the summer, I got a B, and Martin got an A. he stole the show so much.
So good.
Yeah.
He got an A for his role as my dog, and he was amazing. Like,
my story of Martin is, I don't know how, somehow, some way, a conversation between myself and him and two other people in a table at the Buxton Lane Refectory.
Of course,
it all comes back to there, doesn't it? We were having a conversation about The Neverending Story, you know, the film.
Yes.
I said, I've never seen The Neverending Story. And I assumed that my output would be just that. You know, I was like, whatever, you guys talk amongst yourselves. Martin could not believe I had never seen The Neverending Story, and he would not let it go. The next day, he comes into college and he gives me a DVD copy of The Neverending Story. He goes, there you go, Dunk. You should watch this. You have to watch this. I can't believe you've never seen this. I was like, oh, okay, all right, I will. And I take it home. I then, when I get home, I put it just in my DVD collection. I kind of rest it. You know, when you rest a DVD on top of the other DVDs, you know, so you're not putting it in your library as such, but you're just putting it just on top. 2 years pass, basically. In fact, maybe more. Maybe like 3 or 4 years pass. By the way, Martin has not said a single thing to me at this point. And it's Christmas at my mum's house, and we're looking for a film to watch because Die Hard's not on yet. Because obviously that comes on in the evening. And same with Muppet's Christmas Carol. And I go, oh, you know what? I've got The Neverending Story here. So I go up and pick The Neverending Story. And I open it up, and she goes, what's in there? Because she can see the look on my face, and the look on my face is reading a DVD that says hot gay porn. And the fact that, like, and the picture on the DVD was two guys in sunglasses just getting it on. And, like, it's like, this is the gayest porn DVD that you could ever imagine just having. And just the fact that Martin just never said anything more.
That's so good.
It's the long con.
Yeah, it's the long. Amazing. It was the long con. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, and I just looked him over and went, "Yeah, it's not the Neverending Story." Yeah, couldn't believe it.
That's great.
So he held his nerve that long. Didn't even come to me like, have you watched it yet? Nothing like that. Nothing like that. Not a peep. Not a peep.
Didn't even give me a look.
And you know what? Oh, well, you know, I never will. But, you know, like, it keeps me laughing. It keeps me laughing about it. There, you know, that's it.